Hey you, how's it going? My name is Ruby Price and you're listening to the 17th ever episode of Fresh From The Scene. Before this podcast really gets started, I'm just going to say if you do enjoy it, please, please, please share it on social media because you have no idea how much that helps out with analytics, getting the podcast heard by other people. You know, there's only so much that these podcast platforms will do for you as a podcaster, and unfortunately, that's just not enough really to sustain a low-level podcast like this is. And by low-level, you know, I mean I'm not getting paid for it. So they don't really care. But yeah, the things that we talk about in this podcast I think are really, really important. And the more people that hear that, the better the message is going to be spread. So, but yeah, if you do enjoy it, make sure you share it on social media. If you give me a tag on Twitter or Instagram, I'll probably retweet it or whatever it is that the cool kids are doing these days. You can find me on Twitter at FFTScene, that's FFTScene, or you can find me at Rubes, RUUBEZ. I'm also over on Instagram at Rubes001, just because someone else already had at Rubes. I've moaned about this enough times as it is. I'm just going to get right into it. This is a podcast with fellow videographer Ian Coulson. I hope you enjoy it.
You're listening to Fresh From The Scene with your host, Ruby Price.
Welcome to Fresh From The Scene. Today's guest is the incredibly talented Ian Coulson.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Very warm, toasty, sweaty, but otherwise alive.
So who are you, Ian Coulson? Like, what do you do?
What do I do? So I am a photographer, videographer, content creator, if you will, working predominantly in the music industry, but lots of commercial film work, lots of corporate film work. Working predominantly as a director, cameraman, editor, kind of jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing. Predominantly, I guess, known as a content creator for bands and brands and artists and all of that lovely stuff.
What would you say it was that, you know, got you into music videography?
When would it have been? I grew up being in bands, from maybe being 15, 16. And so I was kind of consistently in bands for a long time went to uni, not really knowing what I wanted to do in my life, but, you know, I enjoyed music and then kind of did, you know, photography and bits of videos, you know, as a hobby kind of growing up, never considered it as a career. And then decided in the final year of doing an English degree it's general kind of visual creation was something I really enjoyed. So, you know, had no better ideas. So decided to give that a shot. Thankfully it took, you know, seven, however many years later, I'm still able to do it and haven't gone bankrupt yet. But yeah. And so, because I'd always kind of been in bands and was heavily involved in kind of local music scenes and all that kind of stuff, just kind of naturally fell into, you know, taking photos at shows, making music videos for friends' bands and, you know, just generally people who I guess I knew just from being in bands. And and it kind of just went from there really. You know, the more kind of mates bands I worked for, the more people I got to know. And, you know, as you know, the age old saying is, you know, it's not what you know who you know. And as kind of the network of contacts grew, you know, the level of work I was able to do, I guess, grew with that, and rest is history, I guess. Kind of what, 6-7 years on from first kind of starting. Yeah, I guess that's a brief history.
You've ended up working with, you know, like the likes of 30 Second Mars, Frank Carter, You Me at Six, as it is most notably, I think, from your Instagram feed. Mm-hmm. Surely there has to be some unbelievable stories that accompany that.
Yeah, there's lots of stories. How shareable a lot of them are, I'm not sure. But what kind of story do you want?
Something surprising.
Something surprising. I mean, the stories I can tell, I just probably won't name names. In fact, I think I told I think I might have told this one on a podcast recently, but I'll do it again because it's a great story. There was an artist I was touring with who will remain nameless, and it was the first night of tour, and done the show was all done, and a particular member of the touring party had a bit too much to drink, had kind of gone to bed, you know, in a bit of a state. So we were on the bus, and I don't know what time it would have been. It was late, and most of us were, I think all of us were in our bunks, were like kind of, you know, the bus wasn't due to leave for another hour or two. The driver was still asleep, and anyways, like, heard a load of noise kind of in what you call that bunk alley, like the little kind of corridor in between all the bunks. And this guy had kind of got out of bed, and I looked out, and he was just like squatting on the ground, and like there was the most horrendous smell.
Oh God.
Yeah. And so like my heart kind of stopped. Thankfully he hadn't done anything. And a couple of us looked out and were like, you know, you're right. And he kind of drunkenly got up and just wandered down the bus and disappeared for, I don't know, about 20 minutes. Anyways, kind of fast forward to the next morning, our driver kind of came up to him in the morning. I was like, you know, morning, how you doing, man? He was like old school, like road dog German guy who'd, you know, been touring for years and years and years. And he's like, oh, good morning. It's funny thing. I got off the bus this morning, and there was two shits next to the bus. And I thought, oh, that's strange. Maybe it's some drunk guy from a club nearby. And then I noticed next to the shits, there's a pile of serviettes with the bus company's name on. And so this guy had basically gotten off the bus and then used a load of, like, you know, serviettes with the branding of the bus company on to you know, clean himself up and left the evidence right next to it. So that was a good start to the tour.
I guess you could call it a shit start as well.
But yeah, you could. Well, depends on your perspective, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, I always get asked kind of tour stories, and my mind always goes blank, and I'll think of 20 great ones after this. The problem is what happens in the situation is the only ones that come to mind are ones that I definitely shouldn't tell. But the ones that but then the problem is with that, those are always the best stories, but
the ones that are worthy of a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I get in trouble if I tell those stories.
I mentioned, obviously, like, you've been involved in, as it is, like, you know, even like as far back as Can't Save Myself, if not before, which is 2014. Before they had
Before they had music out. I've been working with them. Yeah. I actually, before they had any music out, I knew Ben and Patty and Andy. Gosh, I knew Ben like through one of my housemates at the time, and got to know Patty through, I think it was through Andy, who was like guitar tech for a friend of mine's band or something like that. And anyway, so they were like, oh, like, you know, you're a photographer, can you do some promo shots? So I took their first ever promo photos before they had any music out. And they have told this story a few times, but there you go. It's not a tour story, but it's a band story. But the reason why the Blenheim Place EP is called Blenheim Place, you might know this, you might not.
Yeah, I think I was at the Sheffield show where they said it.
Yeah, I think it was on the acoustic tour where they did like Q&As, and I think they told that story a couple of times. But it's basically... So Blenheim Place is a tiny little red in Brighton. Road signs, obviously, on EP artwork, which people have lovingly graffitied over the years, which is super weird. That's super weird for me that it's like become this kind of like travel haven. It's like a tourist spot that people visit. That's very, very weird to me. So yeah, we decided to do this photo shoot. There was this, it's now actually been turned into student flats or some sort of flats, really sadly. But there's the old Astoria in Brighton had been like falling down for years. And I'd heard like from a friend of a friend that there was a way to kind of sneak in. So I think Patty and I had gone to check it out beforehand and found this way to get in. So we all kind of turned up, you know, kind of had lights and stuff. And we went through this like, abandoned theater, basically kind of taking all these photos, went up to the roof to get a few last shots, got those. And then I was like, oh, I just want to like take a photo off like the side, like, you know, kind of classic Tumblr-esque kind of post, feet hanging off the side of a tall building. Got one of the guys to hold a light. And so just kind of took a couple of photos, and I realized after a couple of seconds that we're looking directly down through someone's skylight on a couple who were just getting into bed naked. So they obviously saw the flash going off, and we didn't kind of, and we saw them like looking up, and we're like, okay, we should probably clear out. We went down through the building and were met as we were coming out by this very angry guy. And I kind of, you know, explained to him that, you know, really sorry, didn't realize they were there. We're taking photos, showed him a few of the photos. It was fine. He kind of seemed to accept that and went off. That obviously wasn't good enough for his partner. He kind of went off, and we heard her yelling. And then she kind of came out with this massive walking stick and broke it over James, who is the original bassist.
Yeah.
Broke it over his back, and then proceeded to throw eggs at us as we climbed over this big gate. And then we went to a pub and won a pub quiz. And that was like our first, I remember, Ben, as you say, it was like, that was like their first band story. And so that is why the Blenheim Place EP is called Blenheim Place, because that's the road all of that took place on, and where we thought we were gonna get beaten up by a very angry naked couple. They weren't naked when they were shouting at us, but they were before that.
I imagine that would have been like an even crazier story if they were.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Brighton in general. But yeah, so I think for me, it's kind of, it's really cool. It's really strange, but it's really cool that kind of, you know, slightly illegal activity kind of turned into like what it has, that, you know, people, yeah, the fact that people like travel from all over the world to like see that little street sign is crazy. It's crazy to me. Yeah. And I walk past it, you know, like at least once a week. So very strange, but it's really cool, you know.
It's no secret that like I'm an As It Is fan, and I'm in several groups, and like it seems to be a sort of bingo to get a photo with the Blenheim Place sign if you haven't already graffitied on it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and like, and I've seen that, and you know, been tagged in loads of photos and stuff over the years, and just like, yeah, like I say, people kind of just make it, it's become like a, almost like a road trip thing where, you know, people come. It's not from just around the UK, but just like from all over the world. They'll like be visiting the UK, and they'll specifically come to Brighton to see it and to write on it. And it's like, that's batshit to me. I mean, in the best possible way, in the best way. It's just, it's funny how things turn out. Eh?
Yeah. Come to Brighton is the come to Brazil for As It Is fans.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you say that based on like how long you guys have worked together now, then you've essentially become their first port of call if they're in need of a videographer or photographer?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think when you work with an artist as long as I've worked with those guys, it just becomes this kind of symbiotic kind of relationship. You know, they'd have to like specifically tell me like with touring plans if, you know, there wasn't budget or whatever to take me on a tour. Otherwise, I'd just be kind of like, okay, I'll book that out in my diary. That didn't kind of, yeah, any kind of question as to whether I'd be working, provided money and logistics allowed. But yes, and you know, it just becomes, and that's one of the things I love about you know, doing what I do in the music industry particularly, is, you know, you get to develop this really close relationship over time with the people that you work with, and ultimately I think, you know, that allows for far better work, and allows you to be, you know, as you garner trust with someone, and you know, they kind of, because you know, music is obviously something that's so personal. You know, any kind of art is inherently personal in some way, and you know, this person is, or these people are trusting you with, you know, creating art to complement their art, and that's you know, that's a big thing, and there's a huge amount of trust that goes there. And as you know I found that, you know, sometimes it happens from the off, you know, sometimes artists aren't that fussy about, you know, videos and photos and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine. But like, some people were really like, they hold it really close, and those are the people I think I enjoy working with the most, because once you build up that trust, it kind of becomes this, you know, like codependent in like a healthy way kind of relationship where you're able to like feed off each other. And like, I don't actually really like it necessarily when artists kind of like, oh well, you know, do your thing, do what you want. Like, you know, it's nice in some way because it's nice to have creative freedom, but I love being told, you know, I have creative freedom, but also them being able to input, because I want it to be like a collaboration. You know, it's like it's a meeting of the music and the visual side of things. And I think when you have that kind of relationship with an artist, that makes such a huge difference when you're kind of able, you know, it's like a collaborative project rather than they provide the music, you're providing the visuals and whatever, you know.
Like essentially what you're doing is you're creating their thing, but whilst also, you know, using your own, you're the person with the equipment to do it. They just need, you know, someone to bring their ideas to life.
Yeah, but also bring your own ideas. And I think that's, you know, it's like, if you look at it like doing like a co-write on a song is, you know, the reason, and it's so common for, you know, I think people don't realize like how common co-writing in the music industry is. Like, it's very rare, certainly for an established band, to have entirely written all of their own songs. Like as much as they'd love people to believe it, it's just kind of, you know, the standard that, you know, you get, because it's so important to get other people's input, and it's so important. Otherwise you're just gonna, you know, and this is, I was gonna say something, I didn't want to sound like a call out, but it's like, you can tell when artists haven't, because they release the same album three or four times, whereas actually it's so important to get different perspectives, and that's how you grow. Because, you know, and as a creator, I'm constantly trying to look at other people's work and gain inspiration so that I can widen like my repertoire of what I can do. Because if I just stick doing the same thing, I'm never going to grow as an artist. And it's the same with music, you know. And I think that the relationship between like a content creator and an artist is very much that as well, is that I want to be able to bring their ideas to life with my own twist on it. But if I'm just bringing in my ideas, it's going to be, I'm going to be creating the same content or very similar content for every artist I work with, which is, you know, I think it's important to have your mark and your style, but I, you know, you're essentially another part as a content creator, you're essentially another part of the branding team. And it really like grinds my gears when I'll see someone creating content for an artist and they've completely ignored, especially if the artist has like really strong branding and, you know, be it color theme or general kind of like motifs and vibes and whatever, you know, they've got like a branding and design team who have worked really hard to create this image for them. And then someone comes in and just ignores all that and kind of does the same thing. I think it's really important to kind of what you're creating for an artist to be like a marriage of your style and the artist's brand. And, you know, something I really try and certainly more recently in the last like 2 or 3 years, something I've really tried to take on more is putting my twist on their established branding, which I think is really important. Because I think in general, like, I hate calling them consumers, but like people who consume music, like, you know, the fans and stuff, they're so much more switched on to this stuff. Like, and that was a big thing that actually, as it has taught me, was like, even I was going to say with the last album, but even album before that with OK, like people clocked on to like the stylization. Is that a word? The stylization. We'll go with stylization of that whole album. And, you know, people started making it, like, blows my mind. Like, people started making their own clothes and like, you know, and especially with the Great Depression, with the last album, like makeup looks and people making their own clothes and like their own merch. And like, fans are so smart and so creative now. And it honestly, like, every time we tour and people turn up to shows, it blows my mind with how creative people are, like, in the best way. Because I'm like, you guys are like the next generation of people who are going to be working for artists and working in the creative industry, you know, like, you know, some of the, you know, the fan art, but just the ways in which people are able to get creative with like what the artist has kind of established as their like branding and stuff, it's crazy. And I think it's so cool. And I think bands are really, and artists, you know, not just bands, but, you know, across the music industry, is like people are really switching on that actually people want to like invest in a brand, I guess is the easiest way to say it. But, you know, people want to get behind an idea. And like, you look at a band like Creeper, who I think have done it so well, have been so well styled with each album and have had like such a backstory and a concept behind everything. And people love that. People love to like buy into this kind of like alternate world. You know, 21 Pilots, obviously, great example. You know, there's so many artists who are just like being so switched on with like it's not just about the music. You know, you can write great music and yeah, you can do okay, but if you have a whole concept around it, that's what really makes people fall in love with it and really buy into it. You know, you look back at like My Chemical Romance, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they were doing this stuff. And that's, I think, had a huge contribution towards the, towards their success. And people just kind of seem to forget that that worked for so long. And, you know, not to say that people haven't been doing that, but I really feel like in the past 4 or 5 years, there's been a real like resurgence of like the concept album and like the kind of, you know, the idea of it being more than just a collection of songs, which I'm all for because it gives people like me way more to work
with. Yeah, I've very much appreciated the sudden resurgence of actually creating an album rather than just creating a lot of singles put together, which has been the way the music industry's worked because algorithms favor singles.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how it's actually kind of gone, I hadn't really considered that it's gone kind of the opposite way to how with, you know, things like Spotify and all this kind of stuff, how, you know, you can, I mean, this is something that blows my mind actually, like off topic but on topic, is like the difference between industries as well. Like, you know, I worked a lot with kind of, you know, rock and in the kind of rock industry and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, also do work in like EDM and kind of hip hop and stuff like that. And the thing I think that blew my mind when I first started working for like EDM artists, as an example, is like you can have an EDM artist who might have 1.5 to 2 million monthly listeners on Spotify, but couldn't sell 100 tickets in London because it's such a like, it's such a playlisting thing. It's not about the artist, it's about the song and where it fits on the playlist. And you don't have the same kind of like passion in that world for like the artist as you do within like the rock world and the band world, you know. I just found it fascinating. And, you know, that's, you know, these guys make a ton of money because, well, I say a ton of money, a lot more money than bands because, well, lots of reasons, you know, overheads are lower, but particularly because they can get these crazy streaming numbers from playlists. And they, you know, they don't really need to tour. They don't really need to, you know, they can just keep churning out music, keep churning up the streams. And it's just a very different, I think it just surprised me how within the same industry of music, there's like so many different subsectors, and like rock is its own weird little kind of niche within that works so differently to a lot of the rest of the music industry. Yeah, it's interesting.
So sort of like the same way that musicians could take like influences from other forms of pop culture, is there any sort of like other mediums that you take influence for with, you know, the videography that you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, I'm try to make myself, even when I don't want to, I try and make myself kind of watch as much, you know, stuff as I can, you know, and especially like outside of, you know, the normal realms of what would kind of make sense. Like, you know, like obviously, you know, keep an eye on kind of other music, like photographers and videographers, but a lot of my inspiration will come from TV shows and from just general, like I love kind of like travel content in general, and just, you know, I love traveling and like wish I could do more of it, but just that whole kind of, there was like this whole movement, I guess, like 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago of like this kind of new like breed of like travel photographers and videographers, and they were doing this crazy, it's gotten a bit tired now, but this whole kind of like what's now bled into like music stuff of like these crazy edits and these crazy kind of short videos. And I kind of like was aware of that and kind of started feeding that into my work. And then like a year or two later, it's kind of the kind of music industry is like full of it. And it's like I said, it's become a bit tired, but, you know, I think it's so important to like look outside of, you know, like there's one of my favorite shows from like a filmmaking perspective is like the BBC's adaptation of Sherlock, which I think is like, oh man, that show is like years ahead of its time. Yeah, like some of the stuff they do cinematography and editing wise and stuff in that show is like, I have to look it up, like when the first series of that came out, but it was like it's older than you think it is. If you look at like some of the techniques and stuff they're using, 2010. So like the first series of that is 10 years ago. And they were doing stuff in that. And I think like I wasn't in the industry then. And so, you know, would watch it and wouldn't necessarily see it with the same eyes I see it now. But I look back on that now and I'm like, they're doing stuff in there that didn't become like common usage for like at least another 5 or 6 years after it came out. Like it was so ahead of its time. And so like, yeah, stuff like that. And, you know, I love seeing broadcast TV and like movies and stuff where they don't just, because like broadcast world and like the rest of the kind of video industry are completely different beasts. Like to be like a broadcast cameraman and like, I don't say like doing what I do, but kind of being like a, you know, a non-broadcast cameraman is like two completely different skill sets and like two different ways of treating it. And so I love when I see like more creativity in broadcast filmmaking. Yeah, I think, you know, we have, if you're a creative in any way and you know you and you're passionate about wanting to move forward, I think you always need to be looking outside of your comfort zone for inspiration. And you know, that's something I try and do. And yeah, you know, I think it's important not just to stick to what you know.
You mentioned like being ahead of the times in a sense in that. Obviously the most recent Frank Carter tour had the VR experience at the end of it. Were you involved in that decision or was that more of a management thing?
No, that was, so that's, I think they're called Melody. And yeah. I actually think they were also on a, or like on one show of a tour that I did. I think it was Sleeping with Sirens tour. Oh gosh. In fact, I've got the pass in front of me. When was it? 2016. There you go. That's convenient. Yeah. So that was like 4 years ago. So they was doing that whole kind of like VR concert thing. Yeah. Like 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember the guy at the Sleeping with Sirens show like showed me something. Is it Mumford and Sons, I think they'd done or something? And like, you know, they were going kind of back then, and it's only really now that like VR, like from a consumer point of view, like VR has become a lot more accessible. I mean, that was the kind of thing where I had no idea that was happening until we turned up on the day and management like, oh, by the way, these or like all these cameras are this VR company, so if you can like stay away from them. And I was like, okay, fine, sure. But I like chatted to the guys from the company and they were really nice. So yeah, so that was and so I'm interested to see kind of what happens, especially like I'm really interested to see what happens with them with everything that's going on right now, because I haven't actually really stayed up to date on what they're doing. Yeah, I think it's Melody VR they're called. And they I'm pretty sure have like a big back catalog of stuff, so that, you know, who knows, that might be the only real option, unless you want to watch a gig from a car, which yeah, I think they had the first, but it wasn't cars, it was like in Newcastle. I don't know
yeah, if you saw this. That's happening right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a series of shows, I think, which, you know, is great if you're an artist who plays arenas.
Yeah,
and you know, and can justify like whatever it is, 50 60 70 quid ticket. That's great. But if you're a band who are, you know, playing 500, well, even like 1,000, 2,000 cap venues or less down to like a few hundred, it's like, you're screwed. And, you know, and it's not like, you know, they made money anyways. So it's a weird old time. It's a weird, you know, this conversation that, you know, I'm sure has been had a million different times over the past few months. But it's a very strange time to be in the industry. I mean, yeah, like I kind of said earlier, for me, thankfully, it's not all I do. Lots of other avenues as kind of a filmmaker that I can look into. But, you know, I have lots of friends who that is their only work. You know, they are their front of house guys or their lighting guys or their guitar techs or drum techs or tour managers or, you know, whatever. It's like they have no other option.
Yeah. Like I live with a music producer and front of house guy. And as soon as lockdown got announced, his entire income source just got cut off entirely.
Yep. It's really shit. It sucks. It's there's no kind of like sugarcoating it, really. It's a really crappy time to work in the music industry. But, you know, and I think, you know, I've done a couple of like podcasts and interviews and stuff over lockdown. And, you know, the thing I kind of keep coming back to is, you know, now is the time where we have to like adapt and we have to, you know, change our approach, I guess, to to it all, which, you know, is very easy for someone like me to say who already has lots of other options outside of that. But, you know, I think as a music, you know, music industry in general, I think, you know, we have no choice but to adapt. And I have no idea what that looks like. You know, I think already people are, you know, like the kind of...
There's been a lot of like home performances being posted and stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think, you know, like the kind of rise of like the live stream, like the live stream gig, I think has been cool. And it's been really cool to see people get like creative with it. You know, even people who are like kind of much smaller scale, you know, the more kind of underground bands and stuff. It's been really cool to see people, yeah, just, you know, having fun with it. And you know, the larger acts kind of doing, you know, like I know Nick Cave did like a ticketed stream from like Alexandra Palace. And like, you know, I think it's really cool that people are adapting, you know. Well, there's no choice. It's that or go bust, really. But yeah, so it's, yeah, it just all seems to come back to the fact that it's a weird time. I think I've heard the phrase "it's a weird time" more times than I've ever heard in my entire life over the past few months. But
yeah, it's a mixture of "it's a weird time" and "this is the new normal."
Yeah, like, I don't like that one though.
No. The new normal implies that this is how it's going to stay.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a scary thought. But realistically, you know, I think it was funny because I think when it all happened, I was like, you know, I had tours booked in for like September, like October, November. And I was like, yeah, those should still be okay. Nope. You know, and I think even kind of back in like, well, I turned 30 in May, and I think I even thought that we'd just about get out of lockdown for my birthday, which I was wrong. I was meant to be out in LA for most of April, and I remember even wondering whether we'd be out, like when lockdown happened then. I was like, because, just, you know, we had no idea like of the scale of it all, right? And so yeah, I remember thinking, well, should I book my flight? Should I not? Thankfully, I didn't book my flight. But yeah, there was a point where I thought, yeah, it'll be done by like early, mid-April. I'll be fine to go to LA still. Oh, dear. But yeah, you know, it's what it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing like Slam Dunk postpone their like 2020 until like September. And I was like, I'm still not sure if that's going to work. And, yeah, you know, lo and behold, it didn't. Like Enter Shikari started doing their tickets for a November tour, and then that got postponed as well. Like, I think it's fair to say that 2020 is just not going to see any more actual, you know, live acts, is it?
No, I mean, I've seen people announcing stuff for like December, which I think is still a little... No, not even a little. I think it's very optimistic. I mean, I've seen people even like January and February, I think, you know, who knows at this stage, but we'll see. You know, that's all we can do, right? Is just kind of take it as it comes. And, you know, I'm kind of very prepared for the fact that I probably won't shoot another show till Easter.
Yeah.
Quite possibly, at least, you know, we'll see. Who knows? I mean, you know, especially with America, I think, you know, I don't think I'll be doing another America tour for at least a year and a half, because, yeah, I mean, it's a whole different pool game over there.
I'm hoping America sort themselves time so that My Chemical Romance can go ahead next year.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? But yeah, I think, you know, I think the bottom line is it's just like, it's happened now, it's happening. We just got to, you know, like I said, I think you just got to try and be positive and move forward and look at how we can adapt and you know, what we can change and what we can do that's different and new. And like I say, thankfully for me, there's a whole load of other industries that that need what I do still, and still do exist. So it sucks, you know, because obviously that, you know, when I first started touring, like it was basically like paid holidays. Like I could earn a lot more money doing all the other work that I was doing, because I was kind of full-time as a filmmaker for at least a couple of years before I started touring. And, you know, it was just something I really liked doing. It wasn't, you know, so long as I wasn't losing money, or, you know, so long as I was getting paid something, certainly at the start, it's like, you know, it was fine. And then it kind of developed into being more of an actual career path over the years. And, you know, it's still always been something that I've done because you know, I love doing it rather than specific, you know, I'm like, I have to make money, you know, because I've always had other lines of like business to do that, you know, that sure I might not enjoy as much, but you know, at the end of the day, a job is a job. And so it's a weird one when it's something that you love doing, but you still have to remember that it's a job. And you know, it's the only way way I can pay rent and and buy food and, you know, do all that stuff that we have to do as humans. And I think it's still true, is like I am excited. I'm excited for the ways that it's going to change the industry and in the interim, but also when it comes back. And you know, I think it has the potential to like be a shakeup that could be a good thing, you know, if there's this whole is it We Make Events? Yeah, I think it's We Make Events.
The march that was happening.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's a whole kind of like big campaign, you know, for people like myself and obviously all the people I work with, that I think, you know, there hasn't been any big breakthrough yet, but I do believe there will be. And, you know, I hope that that's like a positive thing going forward, that actually that puts things in place so that, you know, people like myself and the people I work with are more protected from a government standpoint. And you know, it's like been this whole thing of like, there's been lots of support for like the theater and all that kind of stuff, you know, like your traditional like live entertainment, you know, and nothing against that. I love the theater. I love schools. I love all of that kind of stuff. However, the amount of people going to the theater versus the number of people going to see live music is, you know, very different. And so, yeah, you know, I hope that it, and I do believe it, you know, has the real possibility to be like a positive force for change within that. So, you know, time will tell, right?
Yeah. Obviously, it might get very dated very quickly then, but what would you say to someone interested in starting out in videography?
So there's the big thing is like the big debate is always like, you know, working for free and all this kind of stuff. And the advice I always give on that is you always give your abilities monetary value. And that doesn't necessarily, well, not even monetary value, but you always give your abilities value. You always view any kind of work that you're doing, you view it as some sort of an exchange. Sometimes that can literally be an exchange for experience, you know. Sometimes it can be, you know, connections. Sometimes, you know, and hopefully a lot of the time it's actual money. But you know, when you're starting out, it's like you do, you know, I wish it wasn't the way, but you do have to do favors and work for free. And you know, and I had to do it, and everyone I know who has a career has had to do it in some way or another. I think the really important but difficult thing to learn is to like differentiate between what's a good investment of your like time and abilities and what's not. So it's like, if you need the experience, absolutely. However, it's kind of like, it's a mutual exchange. So if someone can definitely afford to be paying you, then they should be paying you. And that's where I get more irritated, is maybe a strong word, but well, no, I do get irritated when, you know, I see people, you know, it's exploitation on the part of the client, you know, getting, it's crap for people like me who would otherwise, you know, be able to, you know, be perfectly capable of working for a larger client like that and charging what should be charging. Long term, it's bad for the person doing the work, you know, who's working for a client who definitely has the money to pay properly, but you know, they're being exploited. There's always the promise of future work. However, the reality is, if a company is doing that, they will most probably just move on to the next person who's willing to, you know, and it's like creating a culture of expecting, you know, content for free and all this kind of stuff. Is it's like, it's so important to value yourself. It's like, I literally cannot stress enough how important it is. It's like, even if it's your first ever shoot, what you are doing has value. And ultimately that does, you know, it should be monetary value. That's not necessarily how it always works, but you know, your work 100% has value, and that needs to be basically, just don't let yourself get fucked over. It's honestly just is as simple as it is. Is it's just like, you look at what you're giving and, you know, what you're able to bring to the table, and what's being given back to you should be equal or greater to what you're giving. Like that's as simple as it is. If that's in money, perfect. If it's in contacts and whatever, you know, if what you're bringing isn't able to be very much, then sure. Then, you know, that's, and you know, available resources as well, I think is the big part in that, is I guess the point I'm trying to make is that, yeah, you know, I see And I get it. But I see, you know, these people who have, you know, in the music industry as an example, you know, people who have shot two shows approaching bands playing 5,000 cap venues. And I've had it where I've been booked for jobs and I've had jobs canceled on me because they found someone, you know, pretty much everyone who does what I do will have had it happen where, you know, they've had someone come in and offer, you know, like blazingly be like, hey, I'll come and shoot the show for free. Like, not even like, you know, they're like, you know, I want to work for you. And they'll be like, oh, we can't afford to pay you. But it's like, they've straight up come in and be like, I will do all of this for you for free. And it's like, no, because this person would otherwise be paying someone. So you're taking paid work away from someone else. So yeah, it's a really difficult balance to find. You know, it takes a lot of time and getting it wrong. You know, I got it wrong. I've charged way too little for things. I've done favors where, you know, on the promise of future stuff and been screwed over. It's like, it happens, but you know, you only learn by doing it. And so I say all this, but you know, it's just important to hold it lightly as well and not take everything to heart. And that's, you know, that's the other big bit of advice, I guess, is that, you know, everyone gets imposter syndrome. Everyone feels like, you know, they don't deserve to have to do what they do, or, you know, even the opposite, that it's like, why aren't I getting this stuff? You know, all these other people are doing this amazing stuff and I'm not doing any of that. And it's like, and my wife's actually been amazing over the years for any time I get bummed out by like not getting a job or go, oh, you know, look at what this person's doing. She's always been really good at being like, she'll often just go like, you know, tell me what you've done over the past 6 months. Mm. And I kind of list it. She's like, and she'll just look at me and I'm like, yeah, all right, fair enough. You know, and it's very easy. Don't know how many times I've had this conversation, but you know, social media is such a blessing and a curse that, you know, it's great for what we do and, you know, for getting your work out there, but it's such a like ego and soul killer and like healthy ego. And like, you know, a bit of ego is good. You have to have a bit of ego. You have to have self-confidence to sell what you do, but you know, it can be such a confidence killer in so many different ways, you know, from seeing what other people are doing and comparing yourself to that, to not getting interaction you want, to whatever, you know. And I think the biggest thing is that I've learned is just, again, to like hold all of that stuff so lightly. It's so unimportant. And it's like, especially as I've realized, like with social media, it's like I work with people who have done like crazy stuff, are virtually non-existent on social media, and it's like, it's a really great tool, but it's not the be all end all. And I think I for a long time was like, well, you know, if I don't have this interaction on Instagram and this number of followers, I'm not being seen by the right people. And I work with people who, you know, very successful and, you know, active on social media, but have, you know, a tiny, tiny following, but I know that they know the right people in real life. You know what I mean? And so it's like, it's such a, like a distorted lens that it's like, you know, I think that's taught me a big lesson. It's like, yeah, absolutely, social media can be really good for getting a platform and all that kind of stuff, but it's also not the be-all end-all. And honestly, I've really fallen out of love with like Instagram and all of that kind of stuff. And it's like, I very rarely post work on there anymore, which, you know, I kind of will like every few weeks have a conversation with myself. And I'm just like, you know what, if I want to post, I'll post. And I think I, for a long time, was like, got to always be posting, got to always, you know, be keeping engagement up and be doing this. I'm just like, you know what, like I want to post something, I'll post something. I just think it's like, coupled with the fact that Instagram have completely screwed over their algorithm in the last few years, it just doesn't make me want to. And I think I've realized that it's nowhere near as important as I thought it was. I rarely post, and you know, I still have a job, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you know, and actually, like, yeah, I have had some work through Instagram and through Twitter and stuff, but, and I know a lot of people who get the large majority of their work through Instagram, which is awesome, but it's, you know, so it can be great. And this isn't me shitting on, you know, having a social media profile in any way, because it can be great, but it's like, I think a lot of people think it's the only way nowadays that you can kind of get known. And you know, it's one way of many that you can network and build a profile. And I love it when I like discover someone who is working for like crazy brands and clients and artists who I've never heard of, because it kind of gives me a bit of confidence that it's like, yeah, social media isn't anything.
Definitely notice like a lot of Gen Y / millennials just abandoning social media because, one, it's shit for people's mental health, and two, you know, it's just not really necessary. So whilst I've still got you, is there anyone you'd like to shout out?
My mom might know. Shout out. Yeah, I guess just like colleagues, general creatives that I have a lot of respect for, and you know, people, I guess, yeah, just a list of people who I think deserve attention. Who we got? I mean, we got really good friend of mine, Jenny McCord, who actually shot my wedding. But yeah, Jenny's amazing. She's been a long time friend and is honestly, in my opinion, I think one of the most talented photographers that, not just in the music industry, I just think in general, she is just the most insanely talented person. Yeah, so she's working predominantly with Ellie Goulding at the moment, which is awesome. And the stuff she does with Ellie is incredible. Matty Vogel, another good friend. We worked together on 30 Seconds to Mars. He's now with, well, again, all these people I'm saying are working with these artists, they're not, because there's no no shows happening. But yeah, Matty now works with Billie Eilish. And like, it's crazy because it's like so many people that I've kind of like grown up like through the ranks in the music industry with, like, they're all working for these like crazy big artists now. And it's really cool just to see people like getting what they deserve, like in a good way. Well, there's a whole load of like guys in the States who have been in like crazy stuff. Like, there's a guy called Gibson Hazard who like everyone's gone mad for, and he's a very, very talented guy. There's a guy called Spencer Miller who's really cool. Jack Bannon, he's great as well. Yeah, there's just so many, and there's so many young people. Like I said, like I just turned 30, and thankfully there are a lot of people kind of my age kind of doing what we do, but like there's just so many, like I say kids in the least patronizing way possible, but you know, people who are like 10 years younger than me who are like coming in and just doing stuff that like blows my mind. And it's really cool just to see so many like young, like hungry creative people doing the most crazy work. And you know, I think it's a bright future, you know. I think it's an exciting time, you know. And it gives me drive as well, you know, to try and makes me sound so old, but like to try and keep up with kind of like all these new kind of like young guys coming in. I'm not even that old, but you know, like, you know, it's great. I think there's such a like big like network of support within, you know, I have so many friends who you know just really support each other and really try and grow each other like in a healthy way. And I think, you know, especially within the touring industry, it's like you can't be part of touring crew and be an asshole. I mean, you can, but generally speaking, you won't last long, you know? And so it's like, which is nice, 'cause it means that generally speaking, you know, it gets a bit different on like big arena tours where you have like, you know, 50, 100 crew, but like especially on kind of like, you know, anything up to like 2,000, 5,000 cap venues kind of thing, it's like, you know, that you're generally going to be around really nice people, because when you're on a smaller crew of, you know, 10, 15, you know, no more than like 10, 15, it's like you all need to get on. And you know, for the artist, for the band, it's like if you're not surrounded by people who you get on with, it's gonna be crap, you know. You're stuck in a tiny box together for 4-6 weeks at a time. So yeah, generally speaking, you know, you don't tend to meet too many people who are kind of bring that negative energy. So it's nice.
And if people want to find you, you know, to see examples of your work and stuff, where do they go?
Well, as I've said, I barely post on Instagram, but I am going to start trying it. Now I've had a bit of chilling out. I'm going to start doing more personal work and stuff again. So work's starting to trickle back in, but yeah, I'm going to start actually trying to create again. So yeah, Ian Coulson Media on Instagram and Twitter. I'm currently redoing like my showreel and website and stuff, but that's theicmedia.co.uk. Yeah, that's me.
Well, you know, thank you for coming on the podcast.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And you know, have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much, Ruby.
Thanks.
You're listening to Fresh from the Scene. Ruby Price.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you did enjoy that. If you did, you know, share it on social media. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, you can always scroll down and then go and leave us a nice little review. That would really, really help out the podcast, actually. If you haven't done that already, it will boost the podcasts as far as analytics and algorithms are concerned so much. And, you know, I would be forever grateful. Hopefully there'll be another podcast for you to listen to in a week or so. If not, just keep an eye on the socials and it will let you know when something else is happening. As I said, you can find me on Twitter at FFTScene, that's FFTScene. And there will also be links in the description to Ian, who, you know, thank you so much, Ian, for coming on the podcast. It was fantastic having you on, and I hope to see you again in the future filming for one of my favourite bands. But to you, the listener, I'm just going to say goodbye, and I will see you next time.